Welcome to the Edified Equity Podcast. My name is Dino, and here we focus on all the unique benefits associated with being a passive equity investor in an apartment syndication. You can learn more about and follow us on the web, iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram, and our award-winning blog on Bigger Pockets. All associated links will be in the show notes. If you find this information helpful, please subscribe, like, comment, rate, and review. Today on episode number 61 of the Edified Equity Podcast, you get to be a fly on the wall and sit in on an interview between me and another investor that was transcribed. But on this special Father's Day 2019 episode, I have none other than her third appearance on the show, my daughter, Lucien. Want to say hi?
Yes. Hello.
Okay, so she's going to be helping me out. Basically, what happened was an investor that started investing in 2013, he currently owns and operates a portfolio of over 70 units. He reached out to me and said, "Hey, you got 20 minutes for a phone call. I want to learn more about multifamily syndication. I really think it's the next step for me." And I said yes, you know, not realizing he was going to have the interview transcribed, which is great for all of us because I was able to use it as blog pieces and mini pieces, you know, on LinkedIn and Facebook, and Facebook group, things like that. Also Instagram, kind of mini stories. And today we're taking the transcription and making it into a podcast. So it's available, and that's why we have it, and we're going to recreate it. That way you can hear me actually respond how I responded over the phone. And Lucien is going to fill in for the investor. So here's your opportunity to be a fly on the wall and gain some Edified Equity investor insights as well. Enjoy. So this investor's favorite outtake, which we will go over again in the interview.
The best way to find new clients is to genuinely add value, educate, give without expectation, and have them find you. Dino Pierce.
All right, let's start with question number one.
How did you start in real estate?
So I started about 5 years ago with residential redevelopment, and I was marketing direct to seller. And I was basically getting single family homes under contract. And actually, sometimes they were small, not multifamily, but, you know, duplex, triplex. And anyway, when I found a true opportunity, I would get it under contract and I would sell my position in the contract for a small, quick, yet heavily taxed profit. But I also, it didn't take me long to realize, you know, you should be partnering with the people that are actually doing the redevelopment. So what I would do is instead of selling my position, I would partner with a professional. I would lend a small amount of private money just to help with the rehab, usually about $25,000. I would charge no points, just straight interest, and we would settle up a profit split on the back end. And I did this for about 3 years. However, for the past 2 years, I have gone all in, as they say, in regards to syndicating multifamily apartment communities. And it is my sole focus moving forward. Honestly, I believe that I have at least another 30 or more years ahead of me in this industry. And I switched over basically because it's much more long-term. I mean, it provides not only for me, but for my equity partners, it provides consistent, steady cash flow. There are many more tax benefits. There's always a demand. I mean, currently demand is outpacing supply for this asset class, and people are always going to be in need of that product. And through syndication, it gives me and my team, my partners, the ability to help others get into a solid investment. So we invest in safe, affordable workforce housing, where, like I said, demand is currently outpacing supply. Furthermore, that asset class is always going to be in demand, especially as the United States transition into a renter's nation. I mean, it serves a basic human need, and that is shelter. We're always going to need a safe, affordable place to live. And finally, I see it as a legacy for my children too. And I'm glad that I have Lucien here with me right now to hear me say it. Because even if multifamily investing is something that does not interest them, they will have seen their father build something great over a 30, 35, 40 year time span. You know, having a vision, the fortitude, the patience, the ability to enjoy the process beginning to end from when I first started all the way until, you know, I'm looking back in another 30 years from now or more. And seeing me play that long game, seeing me run the marathon, having that approach is a lesson that I want them to learn and put into practice towards their goals. I mean, what do you think, sweetie? Is that something you think's valuable, no matter what you're working towards?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Okay, Dad, here's question number two. How did you transition between those two activities?
So what I did during my transition is I had a mentor that I aligned with, and I educated myself on every aspect of the business. I also got active right away, and I partnered with professionals in the multifamily space. These are people who have been in the business for 10, 20 years. I would not have attempted to do it alone in the beginning. There's just no way. See, we syndicate, and that means partnering with our private equity partners. The fiduciary responsibility is not something that I take lightly personally. In fact, it's at the forefront. It's what's top of mind for me. It's what's most important. So capital preservation is paramount, and I wanted professionals with plenty of experience on my team, and I share the same values and views today. So I had to bring value to my partner's existing operation in order to get started. I have business acumen. I'll talk about it later, but I'm actually a business operator. I've built trust. I have made connections, and I have these private equity connections in my, you know, that I have relationships with. I'm a thought leader. I educate people on this alternative investment. So that's how I was bringing value. I also focus, I mean, I have some active duties, of course. I'm focusing on market analysis, underwriting, investor relations, and a few other roles as well. But primarily in the beginning, I was bringing my relationships to the table, and in addition, doing other things like I mentioned earlier. So the other way, this is not what I did, but the other way to have partnered with professionals would have been to bring them a real deal. You know, because sometimes you hear, and I quote, you know, if you have a good deal, the money will come, end quote. In my experience, that's not true. You need to build trust with your equity partners, and that takes time. You really need to get to know these people and develop a good relationship with them. It takes time and trust to build relationships and partnerships. There's no shortcut around it. So a solid track record can help you, but again, there's no way around putting in the time to build lasting relationships when it comes to investing, especially when there's money and ample money involved. We're talking about multi-million dollar purchases when we look at apartment communities.
Okay, Dad, here's question number three. How did you know those money partners?
So some of those money partners were longtime friends. Others were people that I met at meetup groups or conferences. And there are those who approached me through my thought leadership platforms on YouTube, iTunes, LinkedIn, the Bigger Pockets blog, my close Facebook group, you know, things like that. Further, in addition to the Edified Equity podcast, I'm invited as a guest on other podcasts, and then people reach out to get to know more about me after hearing me on my interviews. You know, I always say the best way to find new clients is to have them find you by becoming a relevant, credible, and trustworthy source of value in the business. So educating this community of investors has actually helped me.
Here is question number four. How do you keep growing?
So we grow by educating people, asking for nothing in return. I don't monetize my thought leadership. I don't monetize my blog. I don't sell any programs, any ebooks, nothing. I just give to give. In return, people have established a level of trust and they reach out to further the relationship, and they may or may not ever end up partnering.
Okay, here is question number 5. Where are you trying to go?
So as for 2019, you know, we're sitting here, it's June, it's Father's Day, June 19, and we've closed on, it's a little larger than 100-door apartment community this year. And to be honest with you, I'm fine with acquiring another 0 doors or 1,000 or more doors this year. See, we'll do as many deals as we can, but they have to be deals. If the numbers don't work, we don't move forward. It's that simple. It's long term for me. I'm focused on cash flow. We are investors too. And I want us to build up a solid portfolio in the B and C class workforce housing market. Our firm has the luxury of and ability to be very selective with investments. So we're opting out until we find the right opportunity. Again, it's plain and simple. We're not in the business of doing volume and collecting fees. I'm not monetizing my thought leadership. I'm not selling anything. We are investors. And if the numbers don't pass our stress test, we don't move forward. Having said all of that, I want to be clear. I do believe that there are deals to be made. There are deals to be found in today's market.
Here is question number 6. Can you please walk us through a conversation about stock market versus real estate?
Certainly. So real estate operators have so much more control over the investment. They choose the market that's in the path of progress, an emerging market that has a growing economy where the population is increasing. And we really look for a mismanaged asset with below market rent. I mean, that's ideal. It's the ideal scenario. You know, you can increase the net operating income, the NOI, by managing efficiently. And as long as we buy in the right market, we finance properly, we don't overleverage and manage it well, the B and C class workforce housing is going to weather the storm. If you do this correctly, it can be a profitable, recession-proof asset class. In the stock market, it could take something as simple as the wrong tweet to turn things around. We have so much more control. I mean, honestly, if the stock market crashes tonight, rent will still be rent on the first. So right now, what's happening is developers are focusing on building A-class luxury apartment buildings. They're not looking to make more B-class, C-class especially, you know, and that's what's in high demand right now. So we are not negatively affected by the new Class A developments. And to be safe, when we're underwriting, we do look for things like what are the absorption rates, what are the new construction trends when we're looking at our market analysis in the underwriting. You know, I also mentioned tax advantages. And as you know, you can depreciate approximately, now that we have cost segregation, but the new thing is bonus depreciation, you can depreciate about 30% of the asset in the first year by accelerating depreciation through those two. Again, that's bonus depreciation and cost segregation. You're not going to get that in stock market. You just will not get those tax benefits. What that means is, even though you will be positive cash flow on paper, you will show a loss. And of course, that means that is good for you when it comes to taxes. So I'll talk about a track record, past deals. I'd field their questions, and I'll start building trust by showing my confidence in the opportunity as an investor. And then finally, if we're talking about a specific deal, I would discuss everything that you can think of related to the deal at hand, to include the risks and how we plan to mitigate those risks, why we feel it's a safe, solid investment, and why we're getting involved.
Okay, this is question number 7. Do you use the value add strategy?
Yes, we certainly do use a value add strategy. You know, we like to buy buildings that, like I said earlier, they're mismanaged and the rent is below market. We renovate and improve the asset and bump the rents to market, or actually a good business plan is just slightly below market. You think about moving, it's a hassle to move. Even if you're moving across the street, it's a hassle. And oftentimes we can increase rent Residents will stay because they recognize asking rent is standard. Like, that's what's across the street. That's what's down the road. And they also appreciate the new management and the community that we're building. So once we paint and do things like replace carpet, lay new tile, countertops, closet doors, we're going to hire best-in-class property management company for that area and that asset class and that tenant profile. We'll have our leasing agent kind of test the market as we push rent to where it needs to be as leases turn. And again, if they stay, we'll bump it. If they leave, we'll renovate and try to get closer to top of the market. But we definitely use the value add strategy.
Question number 8, where do you like investing?
So right now, if you want to throw a blanket over it, as I like to say, we look at the southeastern portion of the United States. And we look for properties, again, below rent, self-managed or mismanaged. And that is, I'll just kind of leave it there. We're looking in the southeastern portion of the United States. We have certain cities in certain states that we're targeting, but we would get into a new market if the opportunity presented itself and it was a true deal. I don't believe there's any reason to be constrained to a certain location. I live in Colorado. We don't even underwrite deals here. So there's no reason to be constrained geographically when you syndicate and have best-in-class management. And of course, we have an asset manager that's going to manage the manager as they speak and just go line item by line item on things on a routine basis.
Question number 9, how do you look at your cap rates?
So cap rates, a low cap rate can make sense if the price per door is low and there's enough value add and upside available in the management. We see cap rate as a snapshot of how the asset is currently performing, not how we are going to operate the asset, not what our performance is going to do and bring. So we do use the cap rate, though, when we underwrite. We usually like to write in an exit strategy. You got to know what you're going to do. You have to know your exit. So every exit strategy is going to be specific to each asset that we purchase. And to help us get a feel for where we'll be regarding the exit, we're going to use cap rates and be conservative. So for example, if cap rates for a B class in XYZ market are 6%, that's what sales are. We can look at comparables. Everything's selling at a 6 cap. To be conservative, when we model out our exit strategy, even though we've owned it for 5-7 years, we've done all the renovations, all the rent is pushed to market rent. I mean, what I'm saying is we've done all the work. We're going to say, even though we did all this, we're going to pretend like we're going to get a higher cap rate for it, which means we're being conservative instead of going the opposite way and underwriting for a lower cap rate.
Question number 9. How does a typical day look like in your life now?
So I have 3 little ones. One of them is here with me. And so my day starts with my kids, getting them where they need to be. And then I'm doing emails, phone calls. I've got business meetings, connecting with partners, and the list goes on. So I also operate a medical device business on top of my syndication business. And what I do is I use checklists to keep myself on track. I'm very strategic with my time, and I really enjoy documenting and creating content, helping others, operating businesses, apartment building, investing, of course. I mean, I'm really, truly operating 100% in my element.
Question number 10, do you have any recommendations in terms of productivity and routines?
So yes, and this kind of piggybacks onto my typical day because I use it every day. So I have a list of all the things that I have to do every day. These are musts, not shoulds. These are the things I must do. And I schedule them in before I go to sleep or super early in the morning, like before my kids wake up. So everything that I need to do for the next 24 hours is planned out. Sure, I mean, things come up. This is life. But if you schedule your day and you focus on doing the things you have to do, your musts, you can get a lot done in 24 hours. I'm in action and I'm moving very fast. I'm at a very fast pace. So to keep myself on time with my schedule, I use my phone. I set multiple alarms, giving myself about a 5-minute alert before I transition into the next activity or the next task. But when I use this system, and I've got 2 check sheets, one for each business, and I have 24 hours. Every day, I literally schedule it out, even the time I'm going to use to sleep. I look at what's left over. I put in the musts, and I take action.
Question number 11. How do you meet family offices and ultra affluent families?
So I meet them like I meet any of my partners through my thought leadership, conferences, and best of all, introductions. Now, I'm still building relationships with them. It takes time, but it doesn't matter to me, and I welcome the journey. So what I'm trying to get at is, you know, like I said earlier, I've got 30 or more years in this space. I'm enjoying the process from, you know, taking it from a startup to operating efficiently, building the track record, being able to show results, and ultimately looking back in 30, 35 years or so to see what I've built. I am enjoying every step of the way. And like I said earlier, the best way to meet people is to have them find you. And through, again, conferences, the thought leadership, and introductions, that's how I've met and built my relationships with my partners.
Question number 12. How do you use BiggerPockets? What are the benefits for you? What have you gained from being on their funds, expertise, exposure, and connections?
So I use BiggerPockets as a way to give back. My blog's on BiggerPockets, and I help out on the message boards answering questions for other investors. You know, my recommendation to anyone that wants to get started, specifically for you, because you already have some experience, you know, owning and operating over 70 units, is to learn the business and build a team or align yourself with a team. Tell them specifically how you can add value to their existing operation. Remember, that's what I did. If you can underwrite deals, then bring them a deal. If you have a network of people with private capital that like multifamily, help them raise private equity by offering their opportunities to your relationships.
Question number 13. Regarding the SEC exemptions, can you explain the difference between 506B and 506C?
Yes, certainly. So, and again, I'm not, we talked about taxes earlier. I'm not a tax professional. We talking about SEC exemptions right now. I am not an SEC attorney. I am an investor, but I do know the difference because this is, you know, operating in my space. But of course, if you have any questions and want to dig deep, consult with the appropriate professional. Now, 506B, you cannot publicly advertise or talk to people about your investments unless you know them and have a substantive understanding of their ability to intelligently make the investment decision. So I use personally an SEC qualification questionnaire for investors, and I also use an investment needs/goals analysis to make sure that we're aligned and to identify accredited and or sophisticated investors. So we build our relationship from there. Once we've connected, we start to build relationships. This is, of course, if the relationship is not already established and I don't already have that understanding. But the 506B allows you to raise an unlimited amount of money from up to 35 sophisticated and an unlimited amount of accredited investors. It's not a fund. This is a deal-specific SEC exemption. So one of the main differences is we can have in a 506B the sophisticated investor. You and your SEC attorney can determine whether or not they're sophisticated through the qualification questionnaire, where there's a space for description talking about their past investments. So for example, if all their past investments came from the stock market or they had zero past investments, then they are not a good candidate for the SEC 506B exception. Having said that, they can be educated and later on invest as a sophisticated investor, but maybe not into the next one down the road. And 506C requires a third party to prove the accredited status. In 506B, they check the box. They can self-certify. It's different. They need a third party to do that for them. And the general partners can publicly advertise the deal. So they can post it on social media. They can wear a t-shirt. They can wrap their car. They can put it on a billboard. Sophisticated investors are not allowed to participate. You've got to be accredited. So the 506C allows you also to raise an unlimited amount of money from an unlimited amount of accredited investors. It's not a fund. It's a deal-specific exemption as well. That's basically the two differences. Granted, you know the definition, which we did not get into here, of a sophisticated investor versus an accredited investor. It's basically based off of your net worth and income and a time, certain time period. So that wraps up Edified Equity Podcast episode number 61, where we hope you enjoyed being a fly on the wall during this interview for the special Father's Day episode. I'm so happy. I want to thank my guest, third time on the show, my daughter, Lucien. So thank you so much for coming on and asking the questions to me and being with me on the podcast today. You have anything to tell all the listeners before we sign off?
Yes. First of all, I am greatly appreciated for being on the show three times in a row. And to all the dads out there, happy Father's Day.
All right, well, I am sure they appreciate that. Thank you again for being on the show, and thanks for listening. I hope you found this information helpful. Whether you're here for the education, entertainment, or if you or someone you know has a problem finding the right place to invest their money, please help them by sharing this information. I don't have anything to sell, but I am on a mission, and I will be delivering quality, consultative, educational content on a routine basis. Thanks for tuning in. Make it a great day. You certainly deserve it. This is Dino Pierce, CEO of Edified Equity, signing off. Goodbye.